Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pinier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome back St. Paul Saints broadcaster Sean Aronson. Sean, thanks for coming back and joining Kevin and I.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to join you guys, and I'm always happy to do so. Even though the Saints aren't a part of the American Association anymore, I'm always honored when you guys ask me to be a part of this.
Well, Sean, you know, we wanted to make sure you kept that record for the most amount of appearances on the show. So we only got to keep this going here because nobody catches up to you there. But
well, one of these days we're going to have to set the record for the longest podcast. We're going to have to set the record for the longest podcast sometime. you know, we're going to have to whatever your longest is, we're going to have to double it. So one of these days, today won't be that day, but one of these days it will be.
Well, John Dittrich sent us into like a two-part episode one time, so I think that's still the record.
Oh. Okay. All right. Well, I've got something to shoot for then.
Well, Sean, let's talk about year three for St. Paul there in the AAA baseball. Just give us kind of your thoughts about how it's been from that very first year when you're still coming out of COVID to where you're at right now.
Yeah, I mean, as far as all that goes, I mean, we couldn't be more back to normal now. We've learned a lot in the first 2 years. The first thing we've learned is we don't like April baseball. If we could just chop off the month of April and start in the month of May, that'd be great. You know, it was very weird. We opened up our home season, this past week and had opening day and then the second game of the season both postponed because of weather. The first one was because we got 9 inches of snow the Friday before the opener, and they were still clearing the field off because of the just terrible winter that we've had up here. I think it's the third snowiest winter in the state of Minnesota, or in the Twin Cities, I should say. And so they were still clearing the field off from the most recent snowstorm, and the weather on opening day was just going to be bad. And then on the second day, we were looking at a game time normal temp, just regular temperature of 28 degrees. That's not to mention what the feels like was going to be. And so we postponed the second game of the season as well. And then it gradually warmed up as the week went along to the point where we had 60s on Sunday. It's tough. It's weird to play baseball with, you know, mounds of snow outside the ballpark. It's just that's never happened. Even last year when we opened in April, that was not the case. This is the first time where that has happened, where you've got, you know, mounds of snow outside the ballpark and you're playing games inside of it. It's just very weird.
I can't remember. Back at Old Midway Stadium, was Mount Midway melted by opening day?
I feel like it was. It's funny that you bring that up because I was thinking about that as all this, you know, snow was falling this winter, and that was the year that we had the winter baseball game, winter softball game that we were going to play, that we had to cancel because of too much snow, which is weird because we wanted to play a winter baseball game. And I think in successive years, we had it canceled because of too much snow. And that was the Mount Midway year where the city used our parking lot to pile up snow. So there was nowhere for anyone to park in there. And then we had it canceled 1 year because there wasn't enough snow. So I think we did the event 1 or 2 years, but in successive years, it got canceled because of too much snow and no snow, and I think we never did it again. I think outside of the not enjoying playing in April, I think the first 3 years or two plus now, I think it's been good. I mean, it's definitely been enjoyable. The baseball's been great. The talent that we get to see is incredible. The major league rehab guys are tremendous to watch. I think we still have a great mix of fans that come out to see our games. It hasn't hurt in terms of us drawing. As a matter of fact, we're still right where we were as an independent club, as an affiliated club in terms of top 10 in average attendance, above capacity, percent capacity in terms of across the board. you know, so it hasn't hurt us on that front. And I think you're getting a great mix of people that come out because they want the entertainment, and the other side of it, they want to come out and see the baseball.
I know there's a crowd of over 5,000 on Saturday. I thought that was particularly impressive.
Yeah, like, look, it was great. And again, I mean, anytime we can draw 5 in April, that's a win for us because most of them are not going to be.
That's almost like a 10,000 any other month.
Exactly. I mean, we don't make any bones about it. It's a tough draw. I mean, I think what on Thursday turned out to be our opening day, we announced whatever it was, 2,500, 2,500, whatever it was, but there weren't close to that many in the ballpark. I mean, it was game time temperature was, we moved the game up to 3 o'clock from a 6:30 start time. So, so we knew that was going to be a tough draw because we moved the game. And then the next day, the weather was a little bit better, but we played at night. And by the time the game was over, the field like temperature was somewhere in the 20s. I mean, it was just tough. And then, you know, we got Saturday and Sunday afternoon, and it was in the 60s, and it was gorgeous. And, Saturday, like I said, we drew 5,000. Of course, Sunday, you're going up against Easter. So, again, something we've never had to deal with as an independent ball club. You never had to worry about Easter. It's just, you know, it's going to be tough to draw on Easter Sunday. But, again, you're gonna give to get in certain respects. You know, you're going to have to give up the fact that you start in the middle of May and go through the heart of summer, to the fact that you're starting in April. But in return, you're going to get, AAA ball players that if you're a baseball fan, you're going to want to come out and see. And we never drew the baseball crowd, prior to this. I mean, the percentage of our fan base that was actually, baseball fans is probably less than 10%. Now I'd probably tell you, we're probably a good mix of entertainment versus baseball fans.
Well, Sean, let's talk about the big news around the club there itself. Is Gold Klang, Mark Gold Klang, and the group that owned that team? I mean, that's St. Paul Saints baseball. Is it odd to you now to hear that they are selling the club?
Yeah, I guess my initial reaction was shock, but I understand business. I get business. And when you've owned something for 30 years and you have someone that's coming in and you have an opportunity to sell it to someone that you're aware of, that you know, I mean, they've known Peter Freund, who's the CEO of Diamond Baseball Holdings, and we'll get into all that in just a second. But Marv and Mike have known Peter for about 15 years. And they were the ones that introduced him to ownership, to owning a team. I think Peter owns a small percentage of the Yankees, just like Marv does. He owns a percentage of the Charleston River Dogs, which is, the last remaining team that Marv owns. So it wasn't like they just sold to a company, that they were unaware of. There is a connection there. And so, they sold to this group a year and a half ago with their team in Hudson Valley. And I think at the time they had inquired about the Saints, and Marv said, we're not selling, no way. And I think they looked at what they did with Hudson Valley over the last year, and they talked to them about what the future was going to be like. And then they came back and, asked about the Saints again, and they came to whatever the number was that they agreed on. And, and as both Marv and Mike said, that the time was right for them to do this. Any other group, any other time, they probably would have said no. Not probably, they would have said no. This is right place, right time. People don't know this. Like, Marv is 80, 81 years old. He doesn't.
Oh, wow.
My God. If I looked as good at 60 as he does at 80, I'll be excited. Marv Goldklang looks like he's the most distinguished gentleman that I have ever been around in my life. And I think he turned 81 this year. and you would never know by looking at him. But the fact remains, he is, you know, 80 years old. Mike is in his 70s. You know, they're not spring chickens anymore, and they wanted to make sure the Saints were in good hands. And so this was the right play for them. And you don't want to, you know, have it fall into the wrong hands, or, you know, just you want to make sure that you're selling it to people that you have the utmost confidence in. And I think that they've done that. And I think it was a great move on their part.
As you look at the new ownership coming in, as the sales go on, do you expect any kind of changes to go on, or is it going to be just business as usual, St. Paul Saints style?
From everything that I've heard, and I've talked to them and have talked to the other teams that they've purchased, because, again, they purchased 13 other teams before they purchased us, and I think 12 of those or 11 of those were within the last year and a half. You know, and a couple of them are you know, in our league. They don't plan on basically putting their fingerprints on these organizations. Now, some of the teams they bought will need a little bit of help, but a team like the Saints, they've said, look, we believe in the hyper-local of owning a team, meaning we buy these teams, but we want, you know, the local community to continue to support. They don't want to make this into a conglomerate or a Fortune 500 type of industry, you know, where you own all these teams and now they're, pick your favorite fast food restaurant that you go into. They all look the same no matter where you go. That's not what they're looking to do. And I give them a lot of credit because, I've been in contact with them since I found out about this. And, you know, I've got to be the one that writes the press release and handles the media. And, my job also consists of putting together a media guide and a program. And I had asked them for information about Diamond Baseball Holdings, which is the name of the company that bought the Saints and owns all these other minor teams, along with Peter Freund and Pat Battle. Those are the two gentlemen that head up Diamond Baseball Holdings. I asked for information for these guys so that I could put them in the program and the media guide. And after a lot of back and forth, we decided not to put them in. They wanted, and they said it over and over again to me, look, we're fine if you want to put us in, but make sure the executive team that you have with the Saints comes before us. Meaning, make sure that, you know, they're on page one and, you know, we're on page two, three, or four. And then after a lot of back and forth, we just came to the conclusion it was best just to not put them in at all. They don't want to be known as the faces of this organization. They want Derek Scherer. They want Chris Schwab. They want Tom Whaley. They want Sierra Bailey to be at the forefront as part of the executive team. They want those four to be the representatives of our organization.
To me, that's going to be a little different. You know, the memory I'll have of Marv Goldklang was that if it got to be playoff time in St. Paul, Marv was there, and Marv was very involved. He was very interested in what was going on the field. I can remember, I don't know if it was a championship or not, but I remember Marv was the first person from the front office to be on the field after they won in 2019. So to me, that's going to feel a little different, but I just think it kind of goes with the name. It's Diamond Baseball Holdings. It's not Diamond Baseball Ownership.
Correct. Yeah, it's true. Actually, I laughed because I thought you were going to go in a different direction because we've heard a lot of this. The organization that owns Sinclair Broadcasting that went bankrupt has Diamond in their name. And so when Diamond Baseball Holdings purchased the Saints, we got more than a few people that said, aren't they going bankrupt? And they're two totally different companies. So I've had to deal with that. But, yeah, you know, you're right. Marv was out there. It was the championship series. It wasn't the finals. He he had to go back to New Jersey and couldn't come out for game three. Jeff was his son was in attendance for game three. But you're right, you know, after the incredible comeback from 0-2 down, he was there for every one of those games. And in game five, he was the first one out there hugging George, and it killed him not to be there for the championship series. But it's, I mean, you're right. It is going to be different. Again, both Marv and Mike, this was their baby. You know, the Saints were their baby. And, you know, they 30 years, and you look at where they started with this and where it is 30 years later. I mean, 30 years ago, you know, we talk about all the time, I'm not sure there was a media person in the area that thought that the Saints would last, you know, 30 years, let alone 1 year. And, you know, there were a lot of media folks that ate crow after looking at how successful they were. Not only that, but, you know, they got a brand new ballpark in 2015. They became the AAA affiliate of the Minnesota Twins. I mean, forget about lasting this long. There's no one that thought that any of those things would happen. And here they are, and you know, like good business people do, you know when it's time, and you know who the right owners are. And I think they found that. And look, I will always go to battle for Marv Goldklang and Mike Vec. You will never, ever hear me say a bad word about either one of those gentlemen. And they are two of the smartest business and baseball people I've ever known. And if they felt this was the right move, I would never be one to question them. I have the business acumen between those two guys is far and away better than anybody else I've ever been around. And this is not a hastily made move. It wasn't like they woke up one day and said, well, there's this company that's buying all these minor league teams. Let's just sell to them. They did their due diligence. They vetted them as much as as Diamond Baseball Holdings vetted the Saints. And it came down to, like I said, right organization at the right time.
You know, when we do think of the Goldklang Group, too, the main two guys would be Marv and Mike. If you could, do you have a particular story or a memory of either one that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I'll talk about Mike first. Mike and I joke about this all the time. I worked in Fort Myers for 4 years, and then they brought me to St. Paul. And I don't think it was until year two in St. Paul, maybe year three, Mike and I did not see eye to eye. And it was more Mike's thought that I was a guy that all I cared about was the broadcasting side of things. That was all I cared about. I didn't care about anything else. And he told me as much. And Mike and I were just, I mean, I worked for him, and he was, you know, he was the owner, and that was it. There was no real relationship there. And it wasn't until one day, in which it was at the old ballpark, and again, I think it was my second year in St. Paul, and I said, Mike, what is it about me that you just don't like? And he said, you're the typical broadcaster. All you care about is broadcasting. You don't care about any of this other stuff that we're doing. And I looked at Mike, and I said, Mike, you and I are cut from the same cloth. I said, you love the entertainment side of this. You love coming up with promotions. And I said, do you know why you love it? I said, because you love the attention. You like when media folks call you and want to talk to you. And I said, Mike, I'm the same person. I said, because when a promotion takes off here, you know who they call first? They reach out to me. And if you're not available to do the interviews, do you know who does them? Me. And I said, that feeds my ego just like it feeds yours. And I was very honest with him, and I don't think anyone had ever talked to Mike like that. And from that moment on, our relationship changed. I think he had the utmost respect for me after that, because he understood that I got it, and that we weren't that different, you know, in terms of who we were. And our relationship grew so much that it developed into a friendship that, it, you know, when his daughter Rebecca passed, he asked me to write the eulogy for her that they published, and it was the toughest thing I've ever had to write, but it also meant the most to me that he would entrust in something of that nature for me to do, and that's how far my relationship, Mike, our relationship has come. And like I said, the utmost respect for that guy. I don't have a story per se with Marv when it comes to, you know, that sort of, you know, where our relationship turned. My relationship with Marv has always been one of just awe and respect for a guy that I thought was the smartest person in the room anytime he ever walked into it. And I always wanted to be on his level anytime I was in the room with him. I wanted his respect every time that I sat down with him. I wanted to sound intelligent. I wanted to sound well-spoken. I wanted to sound well-put-together when I was in a room with him, whether it was a room of 20 people or if it was just him popping into my office when he came, you know, into town to ask me, you know, my thoughts on players or George or whatever. I actually do, come to think of it, have a story. I don't know if I've ever told this story before. This was, I don't know, this had to be 11, 12, 13. I was one of the years where, like, we were going through a drought, and we weren't, you know, we hadn't made the playoffs. And Marv comes into my office, and he asked me if I thought George still cared as much as he did. And then he asked me if I thought Ole cared at all, or if Kerry cared at all. And for the first time, like, he was asking for my opinion. And I said, Marv, I'm around these guys every day. I've never been around three gentlemen that care more about winning than those three guys. I said, I understand that we have not won in a few years, and we haven't made the playoffs in a few years. But I said, George is the manager you want. And I said, the only two guys that can work alongside George and get you a championship are the two guys that you have in right now. I said, and I don't know if he had planned on, you know, moving on or from them. I don't think he did. I just think he was trying to, you know, get the temperature of what was going on. And I've said this before, I'll say it again, you know, I would rather lose with those three guys than win with anybody else, and I'm sure glad I won with those three guys. But I remember that it was one of the first times it was like he was looking for my opinion on something, and that meant a lot to me. And, you know, I put George Samus up there on that pedestal that I do with Marv and Mike.
Well, Sean, let's talk a little bit about rule changes going on in not only at the major and AAA level, but this year American Association adding pitch clocks. How have you found those as part of the game?
Yeah, here's what I'm going to tell everyone in the American Association. You saw what happened in Major League Baseball this year during spring training, how it was talked about ad nauseum, and it became this huge deal. I think for the American Association, it's going to be the same. And again, I don't know if they're going to have a grace period where, you know, for the first couple of weeks to get guys used to it, they're not going to enforce. I know that that's what they did last year here at AAA. It was a 10-day grace period, and then we jumped right into it. The first month was a disaster. I mean, it was awful. But it really does even itself out. They'll get to a point where you're almost shocked when it happens because, you know, these guys know, and there are three pitch clocks, you know, around the stadium, one out in the outfield and two behind home plate. And you're almost surprised when it happens. You know, we played on, I don't know if it was Saturday's game. I think it was Saturday's game. We had two pitch clock strike threes in one game. And I was shocked. I was like, there's no way we're ever going to see that, you know, in AAA, because all these guys are used to it. But we had two guys, one on each team, rung up on strike three because they didn't get into the batter's box. So I think it's so overblown in terms of the pitch clock being an issue. Guys will get used to it. They will adapt. You're seeing it at the major league level right now, like spring training. Everybody made a big deal about it and whatever, but they had 30 days to get used to it, 20 some odd games. And now if you go to a game, it's, you know, almost not an issue, right? Like, I don't know what the numbers are now, but I know in spring training, exactly what happened in minor league baseball at AAA last year. You start off with two violations per game. It goes down to one violation per game. And then about 6 to 8 weeks into the season, you're down to a half a violation per game. So, again, in the American Association, if there is no grace period, and even if there is, I mean, they won't have a long one, you're going to see it happen a lot, and it's going to seem like it's happening, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a game. And then 2, 3 weeks down the road, it's going to be about half of whatever it is. And then by about a month and a half, you're going to be surprised when it happens. And there's just a learning curve. With that said, I was anti-pitch clock, and now I couldn't be more pro-pitch clock. The flow of the game is so much better. The games are done obviously quicker. We played over the weekend two very bad baseball games. And I don't mean just the Saints. We played the Iowa Cubs. There were two just horrendous baseball games, poorly pitched games, just terrible. And one lasted 3 hours and 10 minutes and would have easily been a 4-hour game if there was no pitch clock. Easily. I mean, it was just bad baseball. The final score was 12-11, and we played it in 3 hours and 10 minutes. And there was another one, I think it was one of the doubleheaders, that was 2 hours and 52 minutes, 7 innings, and would have been 3.5 hours. Again, just bad bit. We walked, in that 12-11 game, by the way, Iowa walked 10 of our guys, I think it was. And then in one of the doubleheaders, we walked 7, and I think they walked, 4 or 5. And there's 12 walks in this doubleheader, and we were done in 2 hours, 52 minutes. So it's not that you're never going to play 3-hour games. It cuts down on bad baseball lasting 4 hours, and good baseball lasts 2.5, 2:40 now. And it's just better. It's cleaner. It's quicker. It's just nicer, and the pace is so much better. Now, I will talk to my broadcasting brethren out there. You're going to have to learn how to adjust your style. No longer can you tell long, drawn-out stories, you know, like I am on this podcast here. There is no time for that anymore. You almost have to have a basketball broadcaster mentality where it becomes nuggets here and there, and maybe you can slip a story in, but for the most part, the game moves quicker. And when we first, you know, did this last year, we actually had the pitch clock 2 years ago, but they really never implemented it. So last year was the first year. I felt like I couldn't get anything out. Like, just the game was moving at the speed of light. And you just have to get used to that, and you have to adjust the way you broadcast games.
You know, it was interesting because we had Doug Greenwald on a couple weeks ago, the new voice for the Winnipeg Goldeyes. And he was saying the same exact thing. He goes, you know, I like to tell stories in my broadcast, but I don't even know where I'm going to have time to get the spots in that I need to get in, much less be able to tell a story. And it was kind of interesting. I was listening to a couple games over the weekend, and I thought the same thing, too, that, you know, you don't tell as many stories or get into story time like you did in previous years when you and JW would just go totally off topic from the ball game because there's just not the time for it.
Yeah. You know, a lot of that's been taken away. You know, Andy Helwig and I did try to go a little off the rails on Sunday when we lost 11-2. Cause you know, it's at that point late in the games where you just sort of kind of go off the rails. But yeah, there's just not as much you know, there's not as much breathing room, to be very honest with you. It's not conducive for, you know, just going into lengthy stories. You can still tell stories. They just have to be shorter tidbits now than what broadcasters were used to doing. And you get used to it. I mean, and again, there are some innings that will still last long and you'll have time for a story. It's just fewer and fewer, you know, opportunities to do that.
Now, you were talking about other broadcasters giving your advice out there, Sean. For those out there who may not be aware of this, you have helped to create a pathway for several broadcasters to move on. J.W. Cox, who Kevin just referenced, got a job down there at the University of Northern Iowa now doing basketball and football, I believe. So could you give us a little update on where your broadcasting chain is at this point?
Yeah, they're all over the place, to be honest with you. You know, everywhere from, you know, double A to high A to the collegiate world, you know, and it seems like every year they're getting new jobs and moving their way up, and it will only be a matter of time before one of them reaches the major leagues. You know, Emma Tiedemann is out in Portland, Maine, you know, just doing a phenomenal job. You know, it's great to watch. I think there are five or six broadcasters that have been assistants with me that have gotten, you know, jobs out there in the affiliated world. You know, I'm proud of them. You know, I'm not sure I did much for them, to be honest with you, but, you know, once they leave me, I mean, they do a tremendous job of, you know, working in this industry and working their way up. And I'm always there for them if they ever need, you know, some advice, or if they just want to talk about a job, or if they want me to listen to their demo, or whatever it may be. I'm always happy to help. And, you know, Jason Kemp is with Charleston, with the River Dogs. You know, Garrett Green just landed a new job. He was in Biloxi and just landed a new job, and it's escaping me what team he just went to. You know, I'm you know, like you said, JW is at Northern Iowa. I'm proud of all of them that they've gone on to, you know, and even those that didn't stick around in the business. You know, sometimes you decide that this is not the route you want to go, and that there's nothing wrong with that. You know, Evan Giddings is doing a phenomenal job out in the Bay Area hosting a radio show, working for the, I know, on the Golden State Warriors, it's their radio network. He hosts a radio show. I think he does maybe some pre and post for Warriors broadcasts. You know, and it's, again, they're all across the country right now. At times it's even hard to keep track of them all, but you know, that's why you hire them, you know, their first or second year out of college, so that they can get the experience to go on to bigger and better things.
Now, I'd be a little remiss with you, Sean. Hockey season closing down right now. Your Kings struggle a little bit down the stretch. What are we thinking about Stanley Cup aspirations out there?
Yeah, like 2 weeks ago, I was hoping they would win the division and avoid the Edmonton Oilers in the first round. Now I'm hoping that they can just hang on to play the Oilers in the first round, because Seattle is closing fast. And, you know, if they follow that and wind up in the wild card, chances are they're playing, you know, they may wind up in the pod, if you will, of the Wild. They wind up with the first wild card and, you know, probably playing Dallas or Colorado or whoever wins that, because I think Vegas is going to wind up with the number one seed out in the West. You know, and so I think the Kings have two games left, and they're going to have to win them both to assure themselves of grabbing the three seed. And again, there was a point in time the Kings were 14-0-1, I think is what it was, and everybody was talking about Stanley Cup aspirations, and they have not played well over their last six, seven games. And Colorado has gotten hot in that time. Edmonton is blistering hot in that time. Vegas has played incredibly well. The Wild have played very well. And so you've got all these teams that all of a sudden now have as many points, if not more, than the Kings. And I think the West is going to be interesting. You know, everybody's already writing the East off that it's Boston, you know, is going to take on someone from the West. But look, as everyone that follows, you know, the sport of hockey knows, the NHL playoffs are unlike anything out there. And sometimes a hot goalie beats you. Sometimes bigger defensemen weigh on someone. You know, Boston has had an historic season, but it's different when you're playing a best of seven. And, you know, you're having to go up against a team, you know, night in and night out, and they're able to adjust to you. And the pressure is going to be on Boston. I'm not saying they're not going to get out of the East. I'm just saying it's not a cakewalk for them. But the West, man, the West is going to be a dogfight. It's, I mean, so many teams that are so bunched up and close together. And it's going to be, it really is. It's going to be interesting. I mean, I don't know, if you're the Wild, I think you want Dallas in the first round, you know, instead of Colorado. Colorado's gotten hot at the right time. They know what it takes to win a Stanley Cup. You know, I mean, of course, unless the Wild can win the division, and you know, they're going to need to win and get a little bit of help from those two teams losing. But yeah, it's the West is going to be a dogfight. You know, Seattle was hot early in the season and even midway. Then they got a little bit cold, but they've heated up towards the end. I think you've got six or seven teams in the West that could come out and die for the, you know, Stanley Cup. You know, the Kings specifically, it'll be interesting. I mean, the goaltender situation is a huge question mark for them. You know, Phoenix Copley has played. I mean, nobody knows who that guy is. Even if you're a hockey fan, you don't know who Phoenix Copley is. He was not on anybody's radar. He was on the Kings' radar when the season started. And he is, you know, if you look at the numbers, the save percentage, goals against aren't great, but he just wins games. He just wins. And, of course, they went out and made the trade with the Blue Jackets for Corposalo, who's been steady. And they got him because his record in the playoffs and what he's done has been extremely good for a rather average team. But they don't have that. If the playoffs started tomorrow, which, I mean, they almost do, I'm not sure who's in goal in game one for the Kings, and I think that's part of the problem. And they're dealing with a couple of injuries. And again, if they play Edmonton in the first round, I mean, my goodness. I mean, this season Connor McDavid has had is spectacular. I mean, it's a top 5-10 season in NHL history.
I think Edmonton's got the same question mark in the Nets, though, with unproven Stuart Skinner emerging as their number one guy, because Jack Campbell's had nothing this year. I think the matchup I find awfully tasty, if it would happen, would be Los Angeles against Vegas with the Jonathan Quick angle.
Yeah, it's funny. They played each other, I think it was a week ago now, and Vegas elected not to go with Quick in net, which I thought that was a smart move. I'm going to guess that, you know, Quick was asked if he wanted to play or not, and I think that was going to be too much for him. I think it's the smart move. And I also think there was a little bit of looking ahead towards the playoffs. Quick can win you games in the playoffs, man. That guy knows how to win games in the playoffs. I mean, if you remember last year, the Kings had no business being in the series against Edmonton. Quick stole a couple of games and nearly stole Game 7 in Edmonton. I mean, he was nothing short of spectacular and nearly won that series himself. And I know he's had a little bit of an off year this year, and that's why the Kings, you know, traded him. But, I mean, that is not a guy you want to face in the playoffs. And you're right. I mean, if it's the Kings and Vegas at any point, which, I mean, it's going to have to be in a later round, perhaps, you know, unless Edmonton overtakes Vegas, which I don't think they can or will, you know, yeah, you're right. It's going to be an amazing storyline.
Well, Sean, it was great having you on the show here today, but you're a veteran guy, and it's been a year since you've been on the show, so I'm expecting a really special final thought from you here today.
Wow. You want a special final. It's been a year. I don't know if I have a special final thought out there. I just want to shout out to the American Association and what they continue to do. I know each year we get further and further away from our time in the American Association, but I'll always keep a close eye on the league. I think what they continue to do is remarkable. George Samus is still a part of the Saints family. He spends the off season, doing kids camps and stuff like that out at our ballpark in the cages. So, I see him, 2 months out of the off season when he's spending time with us. He continues to ask me about players. I continue to let him know when guys get released, in hopes that if he wants them, he can go out and sign them. My heart will always be with the American Association. I spent a lot of time there. I have plenty of broadcasting friends there. We lost one of our brethren this year with Steve going to the New York Mets. I thought it was going to be like me with the Saints and him in Winnipeg. He was just going to be there forever. But I thought it was a great move for him. As a matter of fact, he stayed at my place, as he was leaving Winnipeg and going towards, to New York. He stayed at my place for a night. And so we got a chance to catch up and talk. The broadcasting fraternity is a tight one. And, so I'll always keep an eye on what goes on in the league and, proud of what, Josh Schaub has done, and it's only going to grow. It's only going to get better. And, glad that they're implementing some of these rules, because it just means that the league is growing and the technology is getting better. And, that's what Josh was all about when he was commissioner, when we were there. He always talked about the technology side of things. So I'm very proud of what the American Association continues to do. And to the two of you, honestly, it's very easy to be territorial of the two of you. Because, Rob, I know you sort of got started with Wichita and all that. But, over the most recent years before we left, I looked at the two of you as, sort of, St. Paul Saints writers, even though that's not the way it was and that's not fair to the two of you, but I always looked at you two as like friends of the team. And, I felt like when the Saints left the American Association, I was curious what was going to happen, with what you two decided to do and where you were going to go from there. And you guys haven't missed a beat. You've grown the platform. And I'm proud of what you guys continue to put out, on a weekly or biweekly, time frame. And I'm proud of the fact that you guys didn't let the Saints leaving and say, all right, well, here's this team, especially you, Kevin. I mean, that was your team, and you decided, we're just going to keep going and doing what we're doing, and we're going to keep putting a great product out there, and try to grow this thing. And so I'm proud of the two of you and what you've done. And I try to listen to, as much of the content as you guys put out. And you guys do a phenomenal job, and you can tell the passion that you guys have for the league. That's how I get most of my information. I don't have time to watch games or look at every box score. It's tuning in from time to time what you guys put out, so that I can follow what goes on in the league. And as we get further and further away from our time being there, I'm going to know less and less of the players, outside of, guys that may have played in the International League and are now playing there. But, the number of guys that were playing in that league when we were last there, starts to dwindle as each year goes by. So to you guys, kudos as well.
Well, thank you for those very kind words, Sean.
Yeah, thank you
for joining us this week.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Happy to do it. And, you know, hopefully same time, same bat channel next year at this time.
Well, Kevin, it's been a little while since we had Sean on the show, and it's nice to know that things are still going well there for the St. Paul Saints.
Definitely, regardless, you know, they're AAA now. They're associated with the Minnesota Twins. But, the organization will always hold a spot in my heart, and especially the people there that have been there, 10, 15, 20 years. Tom Whaley's case almost, he was a day oneer, had a little bit of a detour for a few years. So, being in the position we're in, I don't really get into the, rooting day in, day out for them. Although we didn't touch upon it in the show, they are going into a system where there'll be two halves. So we'll have a first half and a second half champion, and we'll have a playoff in AAA this year, which, that's something I was clamoring for, because I just felt like the last couple of years there was no carrot being dangled at the end of the season. They had their little final stretch thing, which hardly anyone even understood, but I'm excited that there will be at least a playoff system this year, and they'll give people that are going to games for the wins and losses something additional to follow along with the quality of play and the entertainment in the ballpark.
You know, Kevin, one thing that you've talked about over the last year, year and a half, has been that, kind of trying to get back to some form of normalcy, even in the baseball world, and that final stretch or whatever they were doing with this thing right here didn't feel like we were really getting that. So a first half and a second half champion allow for some playoffs to go on, and you feel like, all right, well, now we're getting baseball here once again.
And I know, some people are listening in that follow the league. They probably are used to where we just have the 100 game season. But if you go back far enough, I believe it was Northern League days where you had a first half and you had a second half champion. And that gave teams a fresh start halfway through the year, because let's face it, there's been some seasons where teams get way behind to start the season in the American Association. And unless you're the Cleveland Railroaders, you don't make it back and you're buried in the standings. And frankly, by August, unless you got a good promotion going on, there's really not a lot of incentive for people to come out to the ballpark and care about whether the team wins or loses. So I think it was a good move for AAA, and there will actually be, first and second half champions will play a best of three, and then there'll be like one championship game being played in Las Vegas, which I guess they did last year. I don't know how they determined the teams, but they did last year, did a championship game, and they will do likewise this year. And, for Sean's sake, too, the championship game would be in Vegas. So I know if the Saints made it to the championship that he might place a better two while he's out there if he gets time, possibly.
He's got the parlay ready to go again. So no doubt about that. But, Kevin, let's talk about moves from around the American Association this week. First of all, we want to give a little congratulation out there to Danny Amaral, who had his contract purchased by the Colorado Rockies. And, that's just a huge loss for this club, because he became so instrumental at the top of the order for Sioux City last year. And I know Steve Montgomery, happy for his guy that he advances on, but probably not happy that he lost his leadoff hitter.
No, and that was how many times did we lament the fact that Sioux City was struggling offensively as they were muddling their way through the first half of the season? And, a guy like a Danny Amaral came in and gave them an immediate spark. So you hope that he's going to get a legit chance in the Rockies organization, and this just isn't a roster filler spot.
They do sign infielder Kelvin Melian, I guess that is, or Melian is the way that that is said. Lincoln with a big re-signing there, Kevin, as they re-sign left-handed pitcher closer Stephon Moore, who really dominated early on the season, struggled down the stretch, but maybe a full season of playing professionally with Lincoln puts him in a spot to be a guy who could save 12, 15 games for this club this season.
Did we have him on the show last year?
We did not. And we didn't correct that.
Or maybe we talked to him at the All-Star game. Maybe that was it.
Yes, that was what we did. Yes.
Yeah, it seemed like a pretty good guy. So, and you're right. You know, he had a very good, probably first two-thirds of the season, faded a bit down the stretch, but good to see that he'll be back at Lincoln. And hopefully, for his sake, he'll take to the closer's role and be a asset for the Salt Dogs.
Very busy week for the Kansas City Monarchs and manager Joe Calfapietra. They signed catcher Gavin Collins, left-handed pitcher Trey Jeans, and outfielder Dylan Rosa. Then it's announced that David Thompson has been released. I'm assuming he's probably moving on to retiring at this point. They acquire infielder Justin Wiley from New Jersey, and they also re-sign right-handed pitchers Matt Hartman and Jordan Martinson, who were a big part of that sort of swing bullpen starting rotation for the club last year. So, and Joe, we always count on him to come up with some big acquisitions. It's interesting to see the newcomers and how they fit into the team this year.
And invariably, by the time the season begins, we're going to see the roster, and it's going to be like eight guys with major league experience that some will probably still be like LS3, LS4s. So seems to happen with the Monarchs.
Milwaukee re-signs infielder Aaron Hill. You know, one of those guys, Kevin, that every year we hear he's going to have a phenomenal year. A guy who kind of goes under the radar, but Tom Wynn has told us a guy he really likes out there, always puts up solid numbers for Milwaukee, and maybe not getting all the hype that he deserves or something, but really a guy who is an instrumental part of that Milkman team each year.
I don't know why, but I will always remember Aaron Hill. It was right after the 2020 COVID season started, and Hill hit like a grand slam home run off of Mike Devine in Milwaukee, and that was basically the difference in the game. And, you know, for Mike Devine's sake, that might have been the last rocky start he had, because he just reeled off all these wins in a row after I was almost writing him off, thinking, I don't know if this starting pitching thing is going to work, but that always seems to be my standing memory of Aaron Hill, and he'll be going into his, do I count in my head here, what, fourth season with the Milkmen?
I believe you are correct with that. It's officially announced that Mason Davis was released. We knew that he was going to retire, so that was not a surprise. Besides with the Stephon Moore addition, or re-signing, Lincoln adds outfielder Josh Elver. Milwaukee also signs catcher infielder Cam Bejo, Belego, is the way that's said. And Winnipeg signs left-handed pitcher Tyler Jandrin. And let me see what else I got here. I thought there was one other Chicago. Well, there is. Chicago re-signs infielder Cody Bohanic. Cleburne signs right-handed pitcher Riley Smith. And I believe that is all our acquisitions for this week, Kevin. So I think we are technically right today, 31 days away from, or maybe 30, what is he, opening night is a Monday night, so we might be 28 days away. Could we potentially be 28 days away from the season getting underway? Man, it's getting close, Kevin. That's all I know. Even if my math is bad.
Well, yeah, I get through the rest of April, so that's what, on 20-some days, and then I believe like 10, 12 days of May, and you and I will be busy pretty much every night watching American Association Baseball. Goodbye, social life, huh?
Yes, my TVs will be all
hot. Oh, yeah. One could say for us that, you know, once we get on the road, that is our social life. So,
yes, very much so. Very much so. So I think technically right at this moment today, 35, because it is 5 weeks from today that Fargo raises the banner to open the season on a Monday night. So we'll be looking forward to that. Going around
if they get the rest of the snow shoveled by then.
Yeah, that's been a problem. Boy, Fargo, it's been crazy.
Fargo's just been, that Red River Valley area has just been cranked on for snow. They had a Red Hot Chili Peppers concert at the Fargo Dome last, I want to say Thursday night. And there was fans, you know, lived out by Bismarck that they didn't know if they were going to make it in because I-94, even a day after the snowstorm, was still closed from Fargo all the way out to Bismarck. And I saw the pictures of the snowplows trying to clear snow, and it was just incredible. But, you know, we've had warmer days up here now, and I'm sure it'll be the case in Fargo. And by opening day, they'll be ready to go. And, you know, if you worst comes to worst, there's always that Met Stadium green spray paint you can use to make the field look a little better.
I got to tell you, Kevin, the most incredible part about that story was the Red Hot Chili Peppers still performing. I mean, didn't they die out like 10 years ago? Well, who's what do they have?
No, you know, I think they're still putting out new stuff. They were at U.S. Bank Stadium on Saturday night in Minneapolis.
I stand corrected. Okay. Out in the Frontier League, they did not have any major signings that were moves that American Association fans would come to like. But, Kevin, I have to tell you, this kind of promotion for the Ottawa Titans this year caught my attention. They're having Take Your Houseplant Out for a Walk Night, where you're bringing your houseplant to a game. Do you have a houseplant you would bring to a baseball game?
Well, I don't even know if we can have houseplants anymore. You just kind of reminded me of looking out my front door this morning. We got like a couple of pots in the front of the house that apparently our newest dog has taken a bit to digging, and he's dug about half of the dirt through the plants. So I don't know. Don't think we're going to be able to have houseplants or plants of any kind at our house as long as we've got four fur monsters running around. So, long answer to that is no.
The only move in the Atlantic League that really caught my attention was Mitch Gelpy, former St. Paul Saint and Cleveland Railroaders, Sioux City Explorer. Yes, signs with the Charleston Dirty Birds. So congratulations to Mitch for keeping his career thriving there in the Atlantic League. Hope he has great success. I believe that, Kevin, I think they are 3 weeks away. Not in that math, I'm pretty sure on. 3 weeks away from the Atlantic League getting underway. Oh, there was just a thing that popped across their screen. So opening date, April 28th. So 18 days away from the Atlantic League getting underway there. So we'll have some random thing we'll mention at some point during the show in a couple weeks. So we'll stay current, I guess, is the word I'm looking for about the league. I think, though, that is all that's going on in independent or partner league baseball. That's going to be our commitment this year, Kevin. You know, Commissioner talked up last year the positiveness of being a partner league, and so I guess we have to really start using that term.
Well, that's going to take some adjusting on my behalf. I'm just going to warn you right now. Don't know if we're going to have a little swear jar for every time I say independent or not.
I think it took us like a month before we got rid of saying T-Bones and said Monarchs. And, you know, give us a little grace period. We gave 2 years. Well, just give us a few more months. We'll eventually cave on this, I guess. So that'll be fine. Well, Kevin, I think that's it. Before we jump into the final thought, what's going on out there at the 10th inning stretch? Excuse me.
Well, haven't cranked out any content for this year yet. I've been helping a particular website that covers minor league sports, doing some hockey stories. And that's been fun, a nice little endeavor into the world of hockey, doing game stories live and from the television. So thanks to you, I've enjoyed my opportunity doing that. And, you know, maybe I've got a few more stories left to me as we go down the stretch here, but, you know, we'll see at some point. I'm sure something baseball wise will pop up in my head and I'll get something cranked out. So, but no, we're still kind of in dry dock right now, but I'm sure you got things cooking at Minor League Sports Report.
Well, I have to say I've been a little behind, and so it's time to catch up. Now that I'm done with my education, I'm ready to move on to get back into baseball world here. So, thanks for getting
back. Did you want to give the good news there, Doc?
Sure, I will. So, for fans out there that didn't know, I was working on my doctorate degree, by doctoral degree at Liberty University, where I have been working on a doctorate of Bible exposition. And last Wednesday, I officially passed my doctoral defense, so I am now Dr. Robert Panier. So, PhD. So, I don't know if that matters, but there it is, out there for good. So, thank you for bringing it up, though, Kevin. Appreciate that. So, Kevin, how about the final thoughts?
Well, you know, I kind of feel guilty now because I had to change my Twitter handle to Dr. Kevin Luko as a shot to Jill Biden and how very little she did to allegedly earn her doctorate. I thought, well, she can be a doctor, so can I. Well, now that I know someone that legitimately went through the work to get it done, I might have to just end that little skit and change back to just at Kevin Luko out of respect to what you were able to accomplish.
You're still the American Association doctor. I mean, come on, man. You're the guy who everybody comes for good information and who continually corrects me on shows when I say things wrong. So you're definitely the PhD of American Association and formerly independent baseball. So no need to change that at all.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'll roll with that then.
Good.
So,
lay a final thought on this,
final
Kevin.
Thought, huh?
Yes, sir.
Well, this is a topic that's close to me and close to Deputy Commissioner Buchholz. Saturday night, we all had our hopes up that our beloved Minnesota Gopher hockey team was going to win their first national title in 20 years. And I didn't watch the game. I was too nervous. I thought going to a Minnesota Wild game, seeing the Wild play at the arena that the Gophers won the 2002 championship at, would be good karma. But the news was good early. They had a 2-0 lead. News got worse as the night went on. And as I was walking back to my car after the Wild had won the game, got the news on the radio that the Gophers had lost. And, you know, I don't want to say I feel bad for myself, but as a long-suffering fan, it does get a little frustrating when you wait so many years between your teams winning a championship. You know, I went through it with the Saints having to wait 15 years from 2004 to 2019. And now as a Gopher hockey fan, I have waited 20 years with no championship. And I was joking. I said, well, I'm about one-third of the way to being a Viking fan, and so you have not won a championship in 60 years. But, mostly you have to feel for the guys that pour their hearts into the entire season. They get that far, and they play what it sounds like was one bad period, and it cost them. And it just goes to show the quality of these kids, how crushed they were afterwards. And even though there's a lot of guys on the Gophers that are starting the NHL careers tonight and later this week, you just know that they really did care about their team and cared about trying to win a championship for us fans that have absolutely nothing to do with the team other than go to games and root for them. So maybe next year the Frozen Four is in St. Paul, so maybe it's just – maybe it's a sign that that's going to be the year that they finally get the championship. But I was bumming for a while yesterday and just got to realize the sun came up. It moved on to the next day, and it's, in the end, it's just sports. It's not life. I think there's a lot of Milwaukee Milkman fans that could have told you that last September. But, you know, it's so easy to just get so wrapped up into it's a game that it just sends you for a loop in life, but, you know, you got to just keep moving on. So that's my final thought.
You know, Kevin, I have to say on that one thing I appreciated too about that championship game, you talked to me about the Minnesota Gophers had a lot of highly drafted guys, guys with a lot of talent that were going to have NHL careers. And it reminded me when you see those basketball teams in college basketball where there's like four or five guys that are, expected to make the NBA draft or something. And so they're the one and done idea kind of thing. And you could tell if those guys are moving through the season, the championships don't mean that much to them. They know they're going on to bigger or better things. And so that's their big drive. But it's nice to see in college hockey, the guys who know they're going to have a big time NHL career still care about their college program, still want to be national champions. And I think that's just a tribute to how great hockey is in comparison to sports like basketball. And yeah, I don't care if you don't like it or not. That's just the way that it is, fans. Well, there you go.
And, you know, it's it has to be a roller coaster of emotions because I look at players like Brock Faber and Matthew Knies. They flew back to Minnesota, got back home probably about, I think, I heard like 3:30 in the morning on Sunday. Like Brock Faber yesterday afternoon, he's not a Gopher anymore. He's a member of the Minnesota Wild, and he's flying in Chicago to make his NHL debut on Monday night. So it's like they went through all these emotions on Saturday night, flip a switch, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, now you're on a NHL team in the greatest league in the world, and your team is working towards the playoffs. So jump right in, kids, and show them what you got. That's got to be tough.
For real. For real. Well, we want to thank Sean Aronson for joining us this week. For Kevin Loco, I'm Rob Pannier. We will see you next time on This Week in the Association.